Now, I'm joined today by a man with a continuing mission to put Rayleigh on the map. This is Mike Davis, who's chairman of the Rayleigh Town Museum. So welcome to Phoenix FM, Mike. And I have to say that I recently visited your museum and was mightily impressed by what you've managed to put together. So please tell me, how and why did it all start?
OK, well, thanks for inviting me, Scott. The museum is a labour of love for 55 volunteers who work front and back of house. But the history of Rayleigh, as explained to the public, goes back to 1884, when locals had limelight lantern lectures and magic lantern slides and 35mm slides and such like. And then that evolved. And there's a lovely historian, well known by many Rayleigh people of a certain age, called Ernie Lane, who really started everything going with slideshows and talks, raising money for local charities, Havens Hospice and such like. And he put an advert in the local paper saying, anybody got any postcards on Rayleigh? And I contacted Ernie, and over a period of years, we developed a friendship. And he saw that my passion was for Rayleigh, and he asked me to join him. And we set up a little group called Rayleigh Through the Looking Glass, which gave talks and slideshows to local churches, schools, groups, and everywhere else. And Rayleigh Town Council came across us and said, wouldn't it be nice, Mike, if you could spend 2 weeks every year in August in the council chamber giving an exhibition on the history of Rayleigh for everybody to view? So we did that for about 3 or 4 years. And of course, the public said, you really need a permanent museum. So we spent a number of years trying to find a perfect location. And eventually in 2015, we hit upon a lovely, lovely building for the Rayleigh Town Museum to showcase the wonderful history that Rayleigh has.
So, but why Rayleigh in particular? Why did you pick on Rayleigh?
Well, I live in Rayleigh, which is a good help, and well, I always say I'm very lucky to live in Rayleigh. But Rayleigh is a lovely town. Mm-hmm. For such a small hamlet as it was for many hundreds of years, it has a wealth of history punching well above its weight. Mm-hmm. The history of Rayleigh dates back to pre-Roman times, but its significance really starts from the Saxon era. In fact, the word Rayleigh is derived from Saxon words ray, a female deer, and lee, which is a clearing in the forest. But I want to really start very briefly in the fact that Rayleigh has the only castle in the whole county of Essex mentioned in the Domesday Survey of 1086. Right. And we show and showcase the whole history of Rayleigh Castle in the museum. And just incidentally for you, Scott, we've been negotiating with the National Trust and the Southend Museum Service for the last 4 years, and we're shortly acquiring some significant 56 pieces of 1,000-year-old timber from Rayleigh Castle, and colleagues are currently designing a display so we can add that to the story and the history of Rayleigh. But for such a small town, we've not only got that, we had two Protestant martyrs burnt at the stake in 1555. We've got the tallest windmill in Rayleigh, Rayleigh Windmill, which was built in 1809. Mm-hmm. The most unusual council house in the country, a lovely Dutch-styled cottage. We have the whole history of that.
Rayleigh was the whole history going back to which date?
Ah, now, that's a very interesting question, Scott, because if you go and visit the Dutch cottage, owned by Rochford District Council, open to the public on a Wednesday afternoon between 1 and 4 by prior appointment, if you look at the front door, it's got a date on there, 1621. But about 30 or 40 years ago, some clever scientists came along and did an investigation into the actual materials and said, that's not possible because the materials weren't available until the middle of the 18th century. So we think that the date of 1621 was really in recognition of the fact that it's very similar to a number of Dutch-style cottages on Canby Island. But if we go back to 1740, which is the perceived date, why was it built where it was? Because the road was only a footpath. The station hadn't been built. It was halfway up, halfway down a hill. It was a small, tiny little cottage, one-bedroomed little cottage. One of the wonders of history, of course, is every time you answer one question, you're left with another, so you never get the full jigsaw. But it is fascinating part of our town's history.
And, of course, coming more up to date, the Southend Arterial Road, the A127.
Indeed. We do have a significant amount of historical data about the A127, built primarily by the government, the Greater London Council, to give returning soldiers from World War One a job, an arterial out of London, the A127. It was opened in four stages on the 25th of March 1925. The first one was in somewhere called Woodford. And it was unveiled by the wife of the local Member of Parliament, somebody called Mrs. Winston Churchill.
Well, well, well.
The other three parts of the road were had an official ceremony at Harrowdwood, Rayleigh Weir, and the boundary of Southend. And they were unveiled by Prince Henry of Gloucester. And those of your listeners, Scott, who live in Southend will know that the last part of the A127 is called Prince's Avenue after Prince Henry of Gloucester.
Do you know, I never knew that that was why it was called Prince's Avenue.
I can tell you that it was only one lane, there was a cycle lane, compulsory purchase orders, etc., etc., and a wonderful story portrayed in the Rayleigh Town Museum.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about the museum itself, because you say it opened officially, I think, in 2016? Right?
It did indeed, yes indeed, the 9th of April. What a wonderful day that was. But briefly for you, we've had all these exhibitions, as I said, with Rayleigh through the looking glass, and we spent a long time looking for a suitable building in Rayleigh to set up a museum. And it all revolves around a lovely bow window that was once in Kathleen's Hat and Gown Shop in Rayleigh High Street, because at one time it was in the Cater Museum in Billericay.
Right.
It was also in Rayleigh Windmill. And then when Rayleigh Windmill had some significant renovations work, it could no longer be left there. So I was tasked with the idea of finding a temporary home for this 6 foot by 5 foot by 2 foot bow window. And I managed through the Chamber of Trade and other people I know in Rayleigh. There's an empty first floor at 91 High Street, Mike. Have a word with the owner. Downstairs was a ladies' clothing shop. So I contacted John and he said, of course, Mike, you can store the bow window in there. So we continued looking for a museum. I then had the fatal phone call from John and he said, Mike, I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. The bad news is that the ladies' clothing company are going. The good news is a company called Pizza Express are taking over the ground floor. Would you like the first floor for your museum? Then, of course, you've got your head and you've got your heart. The heart says yes, but the head says, how on earth are we going to manage to get all the money together for a museum? Yeah. So the owner said, I'll give you a blank canvas. I'll put in heating, I'll put in lighting, I'll put in a fully compliant lift, a fire escape and all that infrastructure. All you have to do is put in the heating, lighting, all the infrastructure, all the artifacts and everything. So by this time, I had a working party, a group together. There was about 15 to 20 of us who did all the paperwork. We contacted all the schools, the council, got all the letters of support from Mark Francois, our MP, the churches and everybody. And we applied to the Heritage Lottery for a £90,000 grant. I won't tell you how many pages of application there were, but it was a monstrous task. And we applied to the Heritage Lottery and they turned us down. And they said, you're a well-meaning bunch of amateurs, but you've got no professionalism and no sustainability. I didn't agree with them. They said to me, how much are you going to charge people to come in the museum? I said, nothing. It's free. It's a community. And they said, well, where are you going to get your income from? And I'd spoken to the town council and they were going to help with the rent. Local businesses were going to help support us. And I wanted to set up a friends group. Mm-hmm. And the Heritage Lottery said to me, what's a friends group? So I told them, £10 a year, they'll get special events and various perks and bits. How many members will you get of your friends group? Now, I'd done my market research and I said confidently, we'll have 400. And they laughed me out of court and said, you're being totally unrealistic. No other small independent museum in the east of England ever gets more than 250. So I spoke to the local Chamber of Trade and then all my friends and everything, and we decided to reapply and set up the friends group. No planning permission, no lottery funding. It was a really speculative. And I found out that the Heritage Lottery were putting our reapplication together on the 22nd of February. So I phoned them up on the 21st of February and said, can you please put this piece of paper in front of the panel? We've currently got 312 members of our friends group. They gave us the money. If you were to ask me, Scott, how many members of our friends group we had as of last night, I will give you the answer.
Go on.
602.
Incredible.
We have 24 local businesses support us financially.
Yep.
We have a wonderful, wonderful magazine to all our 600 friends, and they support us in all manner of events and exhibitions, etc., etc. And the rest, they say, is history.
Well, I mean, it's talk about a labour of love. And it's ongoing, too, because you've got loads of other events and things coming up, too.
One of the things that we, my colleagues who helped me in the museum, these 55 volunteers, there is a criticism of some museums that you go there and you go back 5 years later and it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
Nothing changes. We have in the region of about half a dozen different exhibitions every year. We have events every year to showcase the various aspects. We've had events about the speedway that used to be in Rayleigh.
Oh, yeah, I remember
We've
that.
Had exhibitions. We're going to have an exhibition on the timbers, for example. We've had displays and exhibitions on the history of the peculiar people. We've had exhibitions on the history of Rayleigh and the Home Guard in World War Two. Yeah. We change things every 3 or 4 months to persuade people to come back.
And, of course, recently you had a World War II exhibition, which
Indeed. The history, the history of Rayleigh in World War II is quite significant. I'll just give you one story, if time permits.
Yeah.
Because the Home Guard was stationed in Rayleigh, and on a road out of Rayleigh on the boundary towards Southend, they stationed a member of the Home Guard in the top of a tree.
Yeah.
Why on earth would they put a soldier in the top of a tree looking out towards Southend? And the answer is, in case the Germans were invading, it was an early warning system. They had a concrete bollard which restricted, and you had to have a pass to get out of Rayleigh into Southend.
Yeah.
And a number of locals, if they didn't have their pass on, then they'd get off the bus at the top of the hill, walk round the back, walk round the footpath, and get on the bus again half a mile later on. Fascinating stories. I could also tell you about the prisoner of war camp that was in Rayleigh in World War Two. No official government record, but I have a significant archive of anecdotal notes from Rayleigh residents who remember the prisoners and some wonderful, wonderful stories of their time in Rayleigh.
Oh, that's great stuff. Now, the museum itself is open every Wednesday, Friday and Saturday?
You're quite right, Scott. We open... the museum, by the way, is in the oldest secular building in the Rayleigh Conservation Area.
Right.
Part of it dates to circa 1350. Part of it was an open medieval hall. Mm. It's at the top of the high street between the Spread Eagle Public House, one of our museum sponsors, Rayleigh Lanes, who support us, and the Crown Hotel. I could tell you some wonderful stories about the Crown Hotel. But we were open on a Wednesday, Friday, Saturday between 10 and 4 o'clock all year round, free to entry, free to come back. We've even got a lovely retail unit where you can buy lovely books and DVDs on various aspects of the history, showcasing the whole history. Everything you see in the museum, from a model of Rayleigh's windmill, from a model of a projector from 1937 from the cinema, from a long case clock, a barometer. We've got a cabinet full of medals of MBEs, Maundy Money, Arctic Stars, all with a personal story relating to a resident of Rayleigh.
And you've got a website as well.
We've got a lovely website, www.rayleightownmuseum.co.uk. And above my ability, we're on Facebook, Twitter and all the other social medias that we need to be, because we're a voluntary organisation. Not one person gets paid any money whatsoever. So we rely on the income from a number of various sources. Indeed. Yeah. But your technical ability, I can see your fingers whizzing across lots of buttons and things that amaze me. We give heritage walks up and down Rayleigh High Street, and we really involve the whole community. We have schools, educational visits. We have groups from U3As and other local groups who come, and we have a commercial arm that we hire out the museum for non-museum-related business just to get as much income as we possibly can to ensure our sustainability for the years ahead and the generations ahead.
First rate. Well, look, thanks ever so much for coming in. Sadly, in the time available, we can scratch the surface, but you managed to pull together for the museum a heck of a lot of stuff. So hopefully we can encourage you to come back and talk to us again soon about a specific aspect, or indeed one of the events coming up, because I know you've got some coming up later.
I'd love to, Scott. We've got, as I say, a lovely display for the timbers.
Yeah.
We always have a lovely display in June of each year to commemorate Rayleigh's Trinity Fair, which gets 10,000 to 15,000 people in Rayleigh High Street. We can do talks on the cinema, a number of aspects that I hope that your readers and listeners will be very interested in.